Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. The fact is we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. So, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you. And let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I think I'm ready. Okay. Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're going to talk about the Blue Line Job episode of season 5 of Leverage. I have Shannon Schroeder back with me. Do you want me to call you by your new pen name?
Shannon Schroeder. It's not a secret. Sloan Steele is my pen name, but even that website will like direct people back to Shannon Schroeder. So I don't have to be like two people, really.
Excellent. Yeah. And at the end of this episode, we're going to talk a little bit more about your new book series that is available for pre-order now.
Yes, it is.
So excited. So this episode aired on July 22nd, 2012, and it was directed by Mark Roskin and, oh no, who was it written by? It was M. Scott Veitch and Paul Guyot. I think that's how he says his name. Every time I say it differently. And they really credited Mark Roskin in the commentary. They're like, Mark Roskin really made Leverage the lookbook for Leverage. So because he's done so many iconic episodes, he really is just like, this is how we shoot Leverage with the roundabouts and things like that. He's not the only person who did that, but they really credit him with how Leverage looks. And now that they're in their fifth season, they're like, now that you're established, you get your fifth season, you've got that fifth season money and you can make things look good. And then I'm like, and then the show is over. It's like, they were like, you used all that money. But this episode looks professional. Like it looks like a movie, the way that it is shot. But let me tell you what the synopsis is. So you know what we're talking about. In this one, the Leverage crew meets the son of a hockey player who comes to them looking for help with his dad, who is an enforcer on the minor league hockey team. And he's afraid that his next game might be his last because he's suffered so many brutal hits and is definitely suffering from some brain damage and or maybe concussion syndrome. But then they investigate and find out that the team owner is even worse than we thought at the beginning.
We wouldn't have much of a story if he was a good guy. So
yeah, he was like, oh, I didn't know when you hit your head that much, it was bad for your brain. No, there's got to be another level of evil.
We have to make him worse.
Gotta up it. First off, that little, he's like, I guess he's like playing like a 15-year-old. That little boy is like the sweetest looking child.
He doesn't, and when I watched through it twice, I'm like, okay, I'm totally cool with Leverage team and people come to them and find them. I'm one of those, like, how is this kid finding, Hardison and his, magic on the internet to find people, but come on, like 15 years, like, who do I find to get to save my dad from himself. Kind of like,
right?
That was just.
The 15-year-old's on the dark web looking for, like, how do I help my dad? Concussion syndrome. I know, it's very, but I don't question it because we got to help.
Leverage and we love it. So.
Exactly. And Nate is really dismissive of this kid at the beginning. He's like, well, he's just got one more game. Like, after that, taking the doctor, he's like, you don't get it. The doctors are telling him there's nothing wrong. These are his medical papers that I've stolen from him. And they just say that he's got bumps and bruises. And they're not taking it seriously at all, which unfortunately is very real in the hockey world. Oh, I guess you should ask, are you a hockey fan?
You know what? I'm not much of a sports fan at all. I have friends. I have some close friends who are very much hockey fans. And for me, like, I think at the time watching this, I would probably have thought, yeah, hockey is really just a sport where people go to watch the fights and then watch the puck in between the fights. So like this, like, really kind of hit kind of like what I believed hockey to be back then. And looking at it now, like, you know, 8 years down the road, that everything that we've seen in terms of like football players and traumatic brain injury, like, This is a long time ago they were talking about this,
yeah.
And those like long-term, you know, effects of, you know, banging your head around so much. I was like, oh, that's like, they're way ahead of the curve here.
Right. There's actually a suit happening right now in the NHL. There's the widow of a hockey player who committed suicide, I believe. She's in a suit with the NHL because they're not taking responsibility for his concussion syndrome and things like that. And the NHL is kind of being horrible about it. And like, there was just new news about that yesterday that came out. His name is Todd Ewan. And so it's like a real thing that's going on all the time, but it is. Yeah. And they talk about it in this, like, most people just assume that hockey is just fighting nonstop, but like the enforcers are there to stop the like really finessing players from getting injured and protecting them when the refs aren't calling the shots they should be calling. As someone who just got into hockey a year or two ago, I don't know a ton about it, but I do know that is the thing. And I love when we get to it, Sophie talking about hockey.
Yes.
Turns out a lot of the people on the Leverage crew are hockey players just for fun, and they would skate a bunch, including Aldis Hodge.
Yes, but I was reading that, and like, and the one person who couldn't skate at all, Elliot.
Christian Kidd, you know, which, yep. I'm in like a wonderful Discord for another podcast, You Can't Do That, which is all about hockey. And the Discord is awesome. So if anybody's listening, hi, I love you. And I asked people if they had any thoughts on the episode, if they wanted to say anything. And one of the people in it, Abby, was like, I was just so impressed. Like, Christian Kane was so good at playing hockey. And I know personally, it's really hard to skate like that. So it was cool that he already knew how. And I was like, actually, he did not. Which makes him even more impressive.
Yeah.
He is truly a Renaissance man. Because I can't skate at all.
No, like, neither can I.
Roller skate, ice skate, no.
Nope.
I'm like holding the wall.
Yes.
always. Okay, let's get into this episode. So we met Danny Marco, whose dad is the hockey player. And I just forgot his name. But yeah, he was apparently like a really good hockey player. He still is, but then they saw his right hook, and so he got cast as an enforcer. And Danny's like, at the end of their meeting, says, I need you to save my dad from himself because he won't listen to anybody. You're like, oh. And his dad is all he has because he says that his mom died in a car accident, which is really awful. And then we flip to Leverage HQ, where Artisan and Parker are playing with a heavy earth magnet. and to show us how strong it is, they break Nate's watch, which why is it sitting out on a table, Nate? If you don't want your things broken, put them away. As my mom told me many times.
Yep.
If you want your toys, gotta put them away. And he also says, have you ever wondered why nerds only have nine fingers? This is why. I was like, no, I've never wondered that. I've never seen a nerd with nine fingers.
I missed that on my first watch too. And then when I watched, I was like, he did say nine fingers. I've never heard of that either. But I guess because they screw things up. I don't know.
Yeah. I put the subtitles on because I was like, is that what he said? And I imagine like you can use magnets to like wipe hard drives and stuff. So if you want to keep yourself private, maybe that's why. But I literally have never seen or heard of anybody with nine fingers as like a rule.
Yeah, neither have I. But the
I'm like, what is this? The Yakuza? Like, they cut off fingers.
The magnets themselves, if you've never played with them, and not their toy.
Like, I was like,
they're not a toy.
Nine-fingered nerds, come on.
My husband does construction, and sometimes he'll use these really strong magnets when he's got to find a stud in a wall, because you slide a magnet, it's going to find the screws, and you know where the stud is. It's easier than a stud finder. A little bit crazy. Anyway, these things, like, they're so strong that, like, if you, like, put them on the refrigerator, like, you have to, like, slide them, like, push hard to get to the edge and then, like, peel them off. So if you have two of them, like, I could put one on each side of my hand and they would hold.
Yeah.
Like, through my hand. So if they're really close, if you hand, like, it will snap. So I could see where you
I could see where you could lose a finger.
Yes. Where his watch exploded. Yeah, that's a bit rough. But I wouldn't want that to happen to my finger.
My thought also in that scene was nothing else got hold to it, and also he didn't turn it off. And when he turned it on, he put his hand around the whole thing to click it on. I was like, nine fingers, get your hand out of there. But it took a minute to power on, I guess. The dad's name is Craig Marco. And he plays for the Oregon Otters, which I think is really sweet. That stadium's actually the home to a minor league hockey team called the Winter Hawks, which I think is a really cool name. And they're playing their fifth game of a 7-game playoff series currently. So they really only have like one or two games left. Well, actually, they have two games.
And they just said it was two games, and it doesn't matter where they are. Nobody's winning in game six. That is just the rule.
Yeah.
Leverage needs two games.
I know, they're like, we'll make sure that we don't win. Well, they could have made sure they won, and then like we wouldn't have to worry about this, but the timeline would have had been severely shortened.
Right.
So then we get a little bit of background on hockey players and enforcers, and we get some name drops like Gretzky and Crosby, which most people know. And Parker doesn't really understand. She's like, so they're like bodyguards? And then Nate explains a little more. And then she says, oh, Schelling's theory of rational deterrence.
I love that. The stunned look. And everybody's like, and it's right.
And she's like, the Cold War? Like, come on. So good. And, but then that's like one that's like, I don't expect Parker to drop this kind of theory. And then Sophie like one ups her with having a lot of knowledge about hockey and an opinion on enforcers and goons and stuff like that. And so I think everybody's mind is like a pretzel right now. They're like, what's happening? But it's because, and the whole time while this is going on, like Elliot's or Hardison's in the background, like, I get a presentation. Can I go back to work? I've got things to show you.
And I love that. And I think that for me, knowing where the season is going, ultimately, it's that whole twice in that one presentation where he had to like corral them and be like, okay, no, we have a job here. Shut up and pay attention. Very much like I am in charge. You need to focus kind of thing. So.
Yeah, that's, and I think that is completely correct. And I also, there's parts with Parker that there are things like that. And there are parts with Elliot that are like that. But I think on top of all of that, I love that, and it happens in a lot of shows, but I think it really is how great the show is, that even if the camera is really focusing on this interplay between these characters on this side, whoever's on the backside is acting and like not just standing there and letting other things, like Hardison is like making faces and like having his own world going on still. It doesn't pause because the main attention is on three other people. But he has like a whole graph of the fights that Marco gets in, and he gets in a fight more than once a game. And they're like spread out on this graph. And there are certain red ones that show when the other teams started the fight with him. And Sophie is really just upset that there's like a fight in every period. There are three periods per hockey game, even on power plays, which is when you wouldn't really need to have a fight. And that's when she drops the fact that she knows so much about hockey because she stole something hockey related once. And there aren't a lot of hockey related things that you can steal. So it's very obvious quickly that she has stolen the Stanley Cup. And Nate is disbelieving because he just saw the Stanley Cup in Boston last year. But apparently that's a forgery, a fake. Yeah. And it's not a good one because her
engraver was bad.
And there are some funny typos on the Stanley Cup anyways, so I would love to see Sophie's engraver's version. And Hardison's like, no, this is back on task. Because also Sophie has said that she doesn't know where she put it. She's stolen so many things. She has so many, storage spaces that she's forgotten where she placed the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. I think she knows exactly where it is, and she just likes to fuck with me.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I can't recall.
Oh. Maybe if you're good for your birthday, I'll find the Stanley Cup for you. And so they say that Danny thinks that the real medical files on him are hidden somewhere. So they've got to go find those and then figure out how not to get Marco to fight, which Nate says is what we have Elliot for. And I wonder if they're ever worried about Elliot having concussion syndrome. He gets hit a lot.
And I think where that might be an issue, but if you ever really watch Elliot fight, he doesn't take that many blows to the head.
That's true.
You know, I mean, he's really good at avoiding, you know, the dodging and the weaving part.
That's very true. Thank goodness, because we don't want him to have those issues. Slurred speech, mood changes, personality changes. We don't want that. You know, Elliot's on that front of stopping him from fighting, and the rest of us are trying to get these files. So Parker goes into this doctor's office pretending that she's a player's wife with like, my shoulder hurts. And she's like chomping gum and offers the doctor gum, and he immediately takes it and pops it in his mouth. I don't know.
I don't think, like, yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Maybe he loves gum. Maybe they did their research and he's just like a gumholic. I don't know,
but yes, to take it and then immediately start chewing it. I mean, the whole thing was, that was a bit over the top.
It was a really goofy scene. She's like, it hurts. Can we just go in there and you can look at it? It's not a doctor's appointment. But he took the gum, he chewed it. It's special knockout gum, which also feels very Batman or something. It's got a little label on it, knockout gum. And they just like lay him down on the ground and then go in and access his files. And then they talk in the commentary, they've really this season put Hardison and Sophie together in more scenes because we haven't really had a bunch of that in the past four seasons. So it's really fun to see their dynamic. And they're looking over his MRIs and his all of the rest of his files. And they're seeing that he's got swelling on the brain with a possible edema, which is, I'm not a doctor, but really bad. And, you know, they're realizing they're really just letting him play. They're not just letting him play. They're hiding it to make him play, which is just awful. Just awful. And I guess we didn't really mention it before, but this is a pretty successful minor league team because it's really marketed as come and watch a fight with hockey in between the fight, which is goes back to what you're saying. That's a lot of people's like idea of what hockey is that it's mostly fights with a little bit of the puck sliding into goals in between.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not as much anymore. I don't think there are some fights and they're fun for a minute. And then you're like, oh, this is horrible. Why are you fighting? But that is very much what the perception is. And I think, I don't know how it is because I haven't watched any minor league games really. So I don't know if it's really different from the minors to the majors, but yeah. But that it's been really successful because people are bloodthirsty and will come out and watch these games. And so they're pretty popular and doing pretty well. And obviously they're in the playoffs. So Nate goes to meet Rising, who is played by Treat Williams and is the owner of this team. He used to play a little bit of professional hockey himself. He played in Russia for a couple of years. As Nate will say in a second, he drank a cup of coffee in the majors, which he gets really offended by. A cup of coffee, eh? And he, you know, comes out on the ice and is told, because he's shooting pucks, and says, oh, you know, the ice is closed right now. I'm the owner, so I've come out here to clear my head. And he tells him that he's an agent and he wants him to sign his player because he's got good stats. And he's like, people don't come, I don't choose players because of their stats. People come here to watch, to see bloodstains on the ice, not to watch hockey. And then, so Nate is like, okay, well, I'm going to appeal to your greedy side and like, let's shoot pucks for money. And then ups it to, okay, no, you know what? Money's overrated. I'll give you my, we'll do 10 pucks. I'll give you my guy, my player. I'll give you my house. I'll give you my boat. I'll give you my jet. I'll give you my wife.
Wife.
What? All right. And this guy's like, sure. This guy who's willing for 10 pucks to give all of this up. Yes. This isn't a con. but Nate injured his pride by saying he only was in, you know, drank a cup of coffee in the majors, so he's not that good, so I'll probably win. So he's blinded him to this obvious point. And they start shooting pucks and, you know, they're even until the very last puck, which dings out of the net. And Treat Williams is so disappointed. But then we see the reason why he didn't make it. And it's because Hardison baked the pucks in a toaster oven. And then they put the magnets in. I don't know what's in a puck. Is it metallic?
I have no idea.
I don't. That reminded me of the, I think it's Ocean's 12 or 13. I think it's Ocean's 13. They mess up the dice and they like weight the dice. So they're like cooking them or something. I don't know. That's just what that reminded me of. But yeah, they put the pucks in there and use the magnet to get them out. So now we've got our guy on the team, and our guy is obviously Elliot, who he's coming from the Northern Caribou League, but no one ever heard of. The players are like, what's that? The announcers are like, I've never heard of that. And his name is Jacques Lebert, and he's like, oh, it's Jack. Actually, it's pronounced Jack. And he's Jack the Bear, which is really fitting because hockey is really big on nicknames, just like between the players themselves, and then a lot of fans use them as well. So I was like, yeah, that tracks. And so he's here to play, and he, you know, is really taking a lot of the fights away from Marco. Marco's getting really pissed about it and is trying to fight with him about it. And he's like, we're on the same team. What are you doing?
What else did you because, do? And that's when we find out about the bonus, because he says, are you trying to take away my bonus?
Yes. And
that's what? And Elliot's like, did you hear that, Nate? And Nate's like, oh, they're paying him.
That's right. Yeah, they're like, find out what's going on. And because, what's his name? Rising, Treat Williams, I'm just going to call him Treat Williams, is down on the ice watching with Nate. His office is unattended. So they're going to get in there to find out more about what this bonus is. And we still have Hardison and Sophie together. And Sophie's like, well, how are we going to get back there? And he's like, Parker's on it. And she just walks by two people and ding, takes their IDs and then gives them to them. And he's impressed. How does she do it? And they get to the locked door of his office. And
I love this line.
He just kind of stands there. And Sophie's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm not the grifter or the thief. And there's not a keypad here for me to hack into, so go for it. And she sighs. She's like, oh. She takes her bobby pin out of her hair and gets in there. I just love it because he's done, as we always say, like, Hardison does all the work.
He does, you know, and I have no doubts that he absolutely could have picked that lock. He absolutely could have, but he was like, I've done my job.
Right? All of Sophie's stuff this episode is just the fun stuff, which we'll get to in a minute. And I love so much. There's a lot of really great footage. So they're in an actual hockey stadium, like I said earlier, for this minor league team. And they really like tried to fill it in. So it looked like it was like a full arena with like, you know, a playoffs amount of fans when they only had like 100 extras. So they were like backlighting them and like putting them all up on the glass. And then they had people on sleds out on the ice to film. And they also used GoPros a lot. So they wouldn't have just one shot of the ice or one section of ice. So they could be all around. And there's a really cool scene later in the game 7 of the puck's view from below, like looking up, and then it like spins when they hit it. And I'm just like, that's so cool. Which I don't think they could have done season 1. So yeah, so they are in Rising's office and they find the files that say that Marco does have a bonus. He gets $500,000 at the end of the season if he's played every game, if he fights in every one of them. And if he doesn't, he gets nothing.
Which sucks.
Play one, like not being scratched for a game, like playing every single game in a season, right, like hockey is unimaginable. And two, like fighting in every game, that's wild. Then Sophie finds like a weird document that has strange numbers and she reads them out and he realizes that the numbers are dates and looks at him and he realizes that each one of those correlates to one of the red dots, yes, of the other team's starting fights with Marco. So that means that he's been putting hits out on his own player, paying other teams' players to fight and hurt his team player, which is despicable.
Yes. Because even that money, all total paying all those guys, is going to be less than $500,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not even paying them a lot of money. Not that there's any amount of money that would make it okay to do that, but like, it also shows you like how little these guys are probably making, that they're like, okay, yeah, I'll do this for $50. Like, oh. Yeah, it adds up to less than $5,000. For every hit, the total of all of them.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So yeah, so they realize they have to, they've got to follow the money. Like, where is this money coming from? What's going on? And Sophie's like, well, instead of trying to track it down, we should let the money find us. So she suggests doing something similar to what she did when she stole the Stanley Cup, which is a con called the Oleg Schlager Shuffle, which is really fun to say. Oleg Schlager Shuffle. And he's like, that's the one with the turtle, right? which is great because we see a turtle live a little bit. And she's like, the Russian one, like my partner on it, Vlad. So we're going to call in Vlad. And, you know, it might be nice because Nezos, he might know where Lord Stanley is. And she's like, no. And then we get this heartbreaking scene in the locker room. It's dark. Everybody's left for the night, except for Marco, who's sitting there with his shoulder iced up, like still in his like pads with his, I think his skates are still on.
Yeah.
And he's, they said they've thought about really focusing on maybe he had a pill addiction as well, which if you are in constant pain, you would probably have, you know, some sort of issues with pain medication. But then I'm like, I'm kind of glad they didn't really lean into like, this is an opioid issue. That would have made it a little too dark. And a little too true to life, probably. But Anne's like, he's also drinking a beer, like focusing on those like just substance abuse things. And Elliot comes in his game day suit, because if it's game day, you have to wear a suit when you leave and when you come to the stadium. And they, in the commentary, they were like, look at Christian in a suit. It's really hard to get him in a suit, and but you have to for this scene. And they were just like so proud that they'd gotten Christian in a suit. And they should be, because he looks wonderful. I think his pants could be tailored better, because they're just too long, because he is a short king. But otherwise, wonderful. His hair looks really good in this episode, too.
But he's a minor league player, so he's not making millions. So, you know, I mean, off the rack with the suit.
It's like $30 to get them hands. Come on. But he's bounced around the Northern Caribou League. Maybe there aren't tailors up in you know, the backcountry in Canada. But Elliot is showing that he cares in the way that Elliot shows that he cares, which is kind of being aggressive and angry and saying, you know, you got one more game. Why don't you let me help you? Like, why don't you let me like not have people fight you? Your doctors are like, then he like breaks character. He's like, your doctors are lying to you. You get another hit, you could die. And he doesn't care. And it's just wild. He's just like, he doesn't care that he's sick, that he could die. Like and it's partially like macho, toxic masculinity, but then partially something else, you know, was going on. And then Danny shows up when they're kind of arguing and you're like, oh, it's also his baby. And he gets really protective of his dad. He's like, we're fine. You can leave now. Like, please don't make this worse. And in the commentary, they were like, but Danny came to them for help and now he's all acting whatever because he's 15 and he's 4 months. I was like, also, he feels like his dad's being attacked and it's not his dad's fault. I don't think he's being inconsistent at all. But this really sweet because his dad like touches his head and he was like, did you see me? I was good. And he's like, you're always good, Dad. But then immediately, because we have to cut that tension, gets a little more lighthearted because we're back in the pub and Nate's asking Sophie if she's messing with him. And she says, when have I ever lied about a grant? and then Vlad shows up. And I really love Vlad. And I really love how they played this whole scenario. Because he shows up and Nate is surprised because he's Vlad Bozniak, who is actually like in the Hockey Hall of Fame in the Leverage universe. So he's very impressed, but instead of getting jealous, because it is obvious that Sophie and Vlad had much more than a grift going on between them, instead of that, like they, you know, he, at first he's a little territorial because, you know, Vlad's like, oh, you hurt Sophie, I hurt you. And he breaks down all the places he's injured or has been injured to like kind of alpha male him. But then after that, it's just kind of, they're fun. They're having a good time together because they're like the three old, not old, but like adults in the group.
Yeah.
And Vlad, who's played by Thor Riefenstein, who's actually German-Serbian, not Russian, but plays my favorite, like, Russian character trope, which is, like, the really happy, jolly Russian. I don't know a ton of Russian men, but, like, I love Russian men in books and TV shows who are, like, the big, happy Russian man.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's a... I think it's a positive stereotype, but I don't know if it is just a stereotype. But I love it. I love it. Can't get enough. Because he's like, stares at him for a minute. And then he's like, I love this guy.
Right.
And then he's just sweet Vlad in the background bringing people donuts and stuff. And they bring him to the arena during practice to kind of like, you know, dangle him over Rising to like lure him in as bait. And Rising finds out that they are working with someone to start a World Hockey League. And he like tracks them down because they're like, oh no, we have to go, we have a meeting. And then they're like cute talking about hockey together. And Rising shows up and he's like, oh, what, you have a World Hockey League meeting to go to? You have to let me in on it. And the person who's in, you know, running the whole thing and bankrolling it, whose name is Olyenkov, Nadia Olyenkov. I'm not very good at Russian.
Neither am I, that's why I'm letting you do all the names.
Who apparently has $2 billion of her own dollars in the WHL. She's crazy, but she's rich and she knows how to make a deal. So Rising is like, you have to get me a meeting with her. I want to get in on this. It's obvious that you're here in Portland because you want this team in some way or another. And Nate says, you're going to have to make friends with the Zuccato, which you're like, what did he say? I don't know what's happening. And then the camera pans over into this apartment and we see this turtle in a fishbowl. And Nate and Rising come into the room. And Sophie's sitting there and she's got this like wig on with like these sharp bangs. And I don't know if we've seen Sophie play a Russian yet.
I don't think so. She does it very well.
I love it. She's so good. Again, this just going off Russian accents I've seen in television shows. So I don't know how. But she's so good at all other accents that I think it's a good one. And she, you know, at first she's like, "Nyet, get out." And he's like, well, okay, this is where I run into an issue with this man. There's a lot of issues I have with this man. But he is trying to get 30 seconds to talk to this woman who has enough money that she could put $2 billion into a hockey league that hasn't started yet. And he says, Miss Olyenka, Nadia, whatever. Like, this is the respectful way he's going to talk to this uber rich billionaire. Like, that's so freaking rude. And I'm like,
if that really is his personality.
It is.
Do whatever you want to do.
It is. But it was like another like grain of rice on the pile of why I don't like this man. And so he's like, I don't want to waste your time. Just give me 30 seconds. And then he says why. I love this. He's like, all right, I own a minor league hockey team right here in town that's good enough for the majors, but I've never bumped them up. You know why? And she says, politics, capital investment, maybe you have a small brain. It's good. And he's like, no, it's not those things. It's because the NHL is too small. She tells him, oh, she's talking to the turtle. She's like, what do you think to the turtle? And because there's only three in the world.
Yes,
and then he reaches over to like tap on it. And Nate's like, no, don't do that. go right through the glass.
Yes, the turtle is going to go right through the glass.
It's like a box turtle. It's not even like a snapping turtle. And so she's like, okay. And then tomorrow you bring me $500,000 and then we'll join. And he's like, all right. It's obvious how much fun they're having just playing Russians. And then back outside of the Otters Arena, practice is over and Elliot's leaving. And as he's like going to leave, somebody punches him. And then it like fades to commercial, but then it comes back because we're watching this not on television anymore. And it's Marco who's attacking him off the ice. And, you know, he's not fighting back. He's just like evading.
I love this Elliot, because it goes against like every cell in his body. Yes, he's going to dodge getting hit, but to not hit back. Like that goes against, I mean, he's the hitter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he does. So yes, to just like be the punching bag instead of the punching bag who punches back.
He's like, you don't know how much I could destroy you right now.
Right. But I don't want to kill you.
And he actually does say how he could. He's like, do you know what your L4 and L5 are? It's your vertebrae, your lower vertebrae in your spine. Yours is cracked all to hell and one more hit and you would never walk again. And then he's like, further proves, he's like, you got an edema in your brain, you got an enlarged heart, and you want me to keep going? And then Marco is heartbreaking. He's like, you think you know all about me, but I know about you, and you don't have a kid, because if you did have a kid, you would know that none of those things are as scary as if you'd like threatened my child. And then we only get scenes with Elliot telling us about his emotions when he's like trying to prove something to somebody else. He's like, yeah, I don't have a kid or a family the way that you mean, but I've had brothers. And then he like kind of talks about when he was in the service and he knew their faces and their ranks, not necessarily their names, and things about bad choices and how they tear you apart. Which doesn't help. Marco just walks off, starts walking away.
The one thing with Marco that, like two different scenes with Elliot now, at no point does he say, how the hell do you know this? How do you know my medical history? And he doesn't question it. And that part like strikes me as weird.
Yeah.
It'd be different if like his kid told him, hey dad, I got these guys to help you. He'd just be mad, obviously. He would still be mad and still probably want to fight them, but at least we would have that piece of, he knows how Elliot knows. But
yeah.
He just doesn't, like, maybe it's because he just doesn't care enough to, it doesn't matter how you know, I don't care, but.
Do you think that's a, like, kind of gap in the writing where they didn't tell us why it wouldn't matter? Or do you think it makes sense as someone with maybe severe brain injuries that he would assume, or he wouldn't connect, like, this is just a guy who's come out of nowhere, he shouldn't know these things about me. You know, if he's just like, well, it's fine. Everybody knows what's going on inside my body but me, and I don't care.
Right. And that's why one of those things where it's like after the game, I didn't question it because he was kind of like in that state where he wasn't, you know, the brain fog was there. Like he was sitting there half naked with his skates still on. Because even when Danny came in, he's like, your skates are still on, dude. So like I would expect it there. But after practice, you know, he hasn't been fighting. He, you know, I'm assuming his teammates are not fighting him in practice. So he's a little bit more lucid, you know, like, so to me, when Elliot's kind of like going through that at least a pause of like, how do you know this?
Yeah.
It may have been one of those things that they cut, you know, as they often do, like, oh yeah, we had that, but we had to cut for time.
Or like, I mean, you know, when you get, I'm having like strange deja vu right now, but like, you know, when you're angry about something and you just keep thinking about it and thinking about it, and then he's got his adrenaline up because he was just physically fighting this man.
Yeah, then you'd be like, it doesn't matter what he says.
Right? You're not hearing any of it. Like, whatever you say, you didn't actually say anything that got through to me because you didn't threaten my child. And Elliot's like, first of all, I'm not going to threaten your child. I'm not a monster. But you're right. I think it is like, it's really telling in either like, maybe they could have written more to that, or maybe it is just a further sign of his mental deterioration that he doesn't question that Elliot's like, I've got your MRIs right here on my phone and I can show you this edema that you've got in your brain. Yeah, because I would be like, excuse me, that's like very much against HIPAA. We should not know these things. And I have the doctor's notes that say, I'm totally fine. I don't know when like the right time to bring this up when is this point up that Abby from my other Discord also mentioned. So the hockey season was really weird this year because of COVID. And if you don't follow, they came back after being canceled for a while and they played in like two different bubbles in two different cities where they like lived in hotels and then they just went straight to the rinks to play. And they like could go play in a soccer field if they needed to go outside in the sunlight. And it was just like, it went perfectly. They had testing every day. Nobody caught COVID while they were in there. It was really hard emotionally on everybody. And then once it got to the Stanley Cup finals, they moved to one bubble because people had been eliminated and they played in there. And then like it is with every end of a hockey season, you find out almost, it's almost like why the other team lost, because they, you finally find out who's injured on the team. And the Dallas Stars were against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And at the end, like everybody on the Dallas Stars was like horribly injured. Like one of their star players, like leg, hip, arm, shoulder, like, and they were like, why doesn't Tyler Seguin have as many goals in the Stanley Cup final? It was because he was literally like taped together. They had people with like mess up feet. Their goalie, who was amazing, like had numbness in his hands for several of the last games. Like they, like these players will keep playing even though they're so hurt. So that's another thing, like him not stopping, even though he knows he could die, feels really realistic.
I agree with that. I totally agree that whether the, see, there's a part of me that thinks like he knows, like, yes, he's got the letters that say he's healthy, but like he knows whether or not he understands the MRI, even if the doctors didn't tell him, look, dude, you're in trouble. He knows, he just doesn't care because he's got a mission. I need this $500,000 because that's what my kid needs, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I could totally see, it doesn't matter how bad it is, I can make it through another game and then I can recuperate for next season to do it all over again.
Oh God. I hope that's not what he wanted to do at that point. I hoped, cause he's older.
Right.
That's an old hockey player. Just looking at him, maybe he was like, you know, this is probably my last season that they're going to let me play, that anybody would hire me. And then he gets this offer and he's like, okay,
one last big payout.
Cause what am I going to do once I'm done? Like what jobs am I going to be qualified for with this head injury? So yeah. And I got to have something for my kid. It's a horrible sport that I really love, but it's, it can be a really horrible sport. Okay. Then we get we're going to cut that tension with a cute scene between Nate and Sophie back in the apartment. And he's holding the fishbowl, staring at the turtle. And then it like pans back and you see that Sophie's like laying with her head in his lap. And she asks him if he's having a staring contest with the turtle. And he's like, actually, I just won a staring contest with the turtle. And she thinks it's hot. She's like, hey, is it weird? I think that's oddly attractive. Yeah, you're like, yes, Sophie.
That is very weird.
But that's just hormones, you know. The turtle, they had a really fun story about the turtle. They originally wanted it to be like a falcon or a hawk.
And then an owl or something.
Yes.
And then just turtle.
They're like, oh, we can't get it. We can't have an owl. No? Okay, turtle? Can we do it? I love it. And then apparently I don't know, the props team, like something like a joke t-shirt that had a falcon, an owl, and a turtle on it or something at the end of the season. So cute. And then they're like being cutesy like this, and then the doorbell rings and you realize that Vlad's been there the whole time too.
When he came out and Nate's like, could you go up and answer the door? I'm like, he was there?
I know, he's like, so did you win? It's so great. And he's like, yes, yes, I did. And then he's so like, kind of condescending, kind of sweet. Like, Vlad, would you mind answering the door? Our guest is here. So good. But then Rising comes in and he says, here's the thing. You guys are for real. Like, you're too for real. You've got the best marketing firms. You've got billions of dollars. And I know that if I get into this with you in a year or two, you're going to push me out. So I know that I can't compete. So I'm out. And they're like, what? And he says, I'm out of hockey. Not just the WHL. Like, my team is bankrupt. I'm going to file on Monday. And so you could be the first in line to buy this franchise, but you're going to have to pay off $5 million to the bank. And because he's got unpaid bills, and he actually says he hasn't taken a salary in quite some time to cover for these bills. And like $4 million of these bills are his deferred salary. So he's like, so good luck with that. Maybe I'll see you on the ice someday. And he just leaves. And they're like, what?
Yeah, like, what did we created this great con, and what just happened? Like, we didn't get to finish.
He's like, huh? And Vlad says, you did too good of a job. And he's like, thanks, Vlad. And then they're like, well, someone had to do too good of a job, Hardison, making us look real on the internet. And he's like, first of all, what, I'm supposed to do a bad job?
I love
her. I don't know how to do a bad job. And I'm offended that you implied that I should. And yeah, so this bankruptcy, because Parker asked, like, what about Marco's bonus? Like, there goes his bonus. There goes all the players' bonuses, their salary, their insurance. It would all be gone. Which, that'd be so horrible. Hardison says that the day before he accessed an account that was held by a shell company, that's super convoluted and he's still unraveling it. And he cleaned everything out. And apparently he's also been skimming. So Nate's like, so he's been skimming from the team. And he told them that he's actually been losing money most years, but this team has actually been doing really well because it's just basically Fight Club on knives on the ice. So he's definitely stealing from the operation. And that's why he won't go into business with them, because if he joins, there's going to be all these audits that are going to trace this money and be like, this is hinky. This is not good. And then Vlad comes in with some voodoo donuts. And there's a couple great opportunities for product placement in this episode. There's like on the boards of the hockey arena, or it's like, an ad for Stumptown Coffee. Okay. He comes in with that pink box from Voodoo Donuts, just like all these Portland places. Very nice. But just like, donuts? Anybody donuts? I love them. I think Vlad should come back. And they said in the commentary, they're like, if we get another season of Leverage, we should totally have him back. I'm like, guess what? We have another season of Leverage. Let's ask him to come back. What's he doing?
They need a new plan to steal.
They need a new plan, you're right.
Skimming. And, you know, when we talk about how the team has evolved from Nate just telling everybody what they're going to do to, like, this season where, you know, Hardison's directing people like, hello, we have, you know, this going on and what, I'm supposed to do a bad job? And then in this scene, this Nate's, you know, they look at Parker like, hey, do you have a plan? And she's like, oh, yeah, I got this covered. It was one of my contingencies. So it's like she's like owning that. But what I love most, other than Parker just being brilliant when nobody expects her to be brilliant, if you look at that scene, the way Hardison looks at her when she says, oh yeah, that was one of my contingencies. And it's this look like, oh yeah, that's my girl.
Oh, I'll have to go back and look.
It is. Oh, it's such a good look.
That's great. Oh, we skipped the scene because they really wanted to, this is in the commentary, really establish that Parker and Hardison are definitely a couple. Green. Yes. And they also were like, we're not going to make this like about their romance. Their romance is happening. This is the story. But like, she comes downstairs in her like pajamas. She's like, did I fall asleep? And he has coffee ready for her. And he's like, just is like, how did it end? And he says, oh, Soylent Green was people.
Okay. You know what though? So I had to go look it up. Did you go look at this movie?
I knew what this movie was. Yeah.
Okay. I've never heard of it. I had to look it up. I'm like, Okay. So it's like post-apocalyptic and we're living on soybeans and lentils. And the movie ends with the dudes because they're using bodies to grow Soylent Green. And so it's like what Hardison says is the last line of the movie is the guys being there. We're like, that was good. So Soylent Green is people. I was like, ew.
Yes. Well, let's see. So Soylent Green came out in 1973. It's like a post-apocalyptic movie. And oh, it says it's an American ecological dystopian thriller film.
Yes.
It is, yeah.
Some crazy pants.
It's like Charlton Heston, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so he's a cop and rich people still get to do all the rich people things and the poor people are eating some Soylent nastiness. And then we have,
I feel like that's a great movie for Parker and Hardison to be watching. Like, the rich get richer. They're like, we're going to make sure that nobody's eating Soylent Green in the future.
Well, you know what? And it's funny because now that I looked at that and you said that one of the things I saw about Leverage 2.0 and kind of like the force behind why they're doing what they're doing is that for all these years, they've watched the rich get richer and, you know, consequences. So I think they will have consequences.
We'll talk about Leverage 2 in a minute. So excited. But this scene is just very, obviously this isn't the first time she says that I fall asleep again. So like they, you know, she's got her pajamas. They're obviously very intimate, very close. Like whether or not they're, I don't know, not getting into their business, but you know, she's comfortable enough to fall asleep in this place. They've obviously watched movies together and she's done this more than once. I think that Parker being comfortable enough to fall asleep in somebody else's presence is really in line with her character becoming more human as the series goes on.
Absolutely. Like that comfort level that.
Yeah.
Because I wanted like in those early seasons where she was just kind of like all over the place. Like I don't, like she never slept. Like, you know, that was never something that you would even consider because even if she was tired, there were other people around and you can't trust anybody. So no, I'm not going to sleep.
I mean, if you think like her, where she lived in that warehouse with like the bed and all of her stuff around it with like nothing else in the warehouse, she didn't trust to have any, like her back to a wall. Like she needed an exit at all times. So yeah, that's very good character development, y'all. Good job. So she's got contingencies and we're about to play game 7. So I also like going with what you were saying of this trend this season, Nate has Parker explaining to him how this is all going to work too. Cause it's not just like she has a contingency and then it gets put into motion. We actually get to see her orchestrating things or in explaining things. So the people are buying their tickets. We see only people buying with cash. In the commentary, they said it'd be pretty easy to say, oh, our card machine's not working. You have to pay in cash. I would never be able to go to a hockey game if that was the case, but never has cash.
The ATM.
Right? Exactly. Oh, and we're going to take $2 fee for you to use this ATM too.
Yep.
So they take the cash. Every 20 minutes, a guard comes to collect the cash from the box office, and that's dropped into a specially designed lockbox that's basically like a walking mailbox. So you can put things in, but only a bank official can get them out. And then once that's the box office is closed, the lockbox is carried from Rising's office to the loading zone, and an armored car picks it up to take it to the bank. And then once it's on the armored car, the bank's insurance kicks in and he's protected from any sort of theft. So they have to get this before. And that leaves only one place that they can get it from in that chain of events. And I'm like, where? I don't know. I love being dumb about this. I'm like, if I thought about it, I could probably figure out where that link is, but I'm just going to let them show me. And you writing heist are like, I got it. I know.
Well, because if you hit just the box office, I would think his own insurance would kick in. It's been picked up and it's in the lockbox. He swears he put it in the lockbox.
Yeah. And then he, then it's in his office.
Mm-hmm. And so then, the only people who had access to it was him. And so then if it's not there, it's got to be him.
Yeah. But in the moment, I'm like, I don't know. Parker, show me. Then we see Vlad getting ready to go. And he asks Sophie if, you know, she's like, you like this new guy that you're working with? And she's like, yeah, I really do. I shouldn't, but I like him. And he kisses her on the mouth and he calls her my rose and he leaves. And he's, it's just so sweet.
See, you know what? And okay, so I don't know if it's, is it Rose or Rosa?
Because he says, he does say Rosa, but he says my Rosa. And but he also calls her Sophie at some point.
And some of the things that I was reading, like trying to, because, and what the what's the blog, Kung Fu Monkey?
Yeah.
He was saying, you know, yes, someone will say her real name. They will actually say it. You will know what name it is. And so everybody's like, her real name is Rosa. And it was like, So now it's like, so I don't know. Like, I think that for the rest of the season, I'm really going to pay attention to see if anybody ever, because I've for years been trying to figure out, do they ever say it? I don't know.
Well, what's the, what is the like Duchess or whatever call her in the auction job? That's not what it's called.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Dang it, someone. When they go to England. The King David job. No, King George. King George. Two David job. King George job. She like has a name for her. And that's actually someone from her past. But I think that's too obvious. That's not really her name.
So yeah. Wow. So I wrote that down, I'm like, Rosa. Is Rosa really her name? She
doesn't look like a Rosa.
She doesn't look like her. She looks like a Sophie. But
she's English. They would. She would be Rose if it was. So maybe that's it. Like he calls her Rosa because that's, I don't know what he would say in Russian, but it's Rose. Maybe?
I don't know.
I like it. I'll have to keep an eye out as well. I like not knowing her name, honestly. Wouldn't it be hilarious though? Because like, it's because Nate isn't allowed to know her name, but like,
when
wouldn't
they it be come hilarious? Back, everybody else calls her by her real name.
Yes, because Nate's not going to be in the new season. So now we can call her her real name. That would be so great.
We're a little bit.
I would love that. Oh my gosh. So he gives her a smooch and goes, and then we start game seven, and the commentators keep talking about how LeBaire, Jack Elliott's character, is, you know, being fighty, and Marco's trying to fight people, but nobody's fighting with him yet, but he's like a shark with blood in the water, but LeBaire is out there like, you know, being very physical with people and then also talking the whole time.
Nonstop.
Yeah. And they said he's jawing at everybody and he's talking smack or whatever, but what they should be calling it is chirping, because that is what like the hockey term is for like talking shit on the ice is chirping. And I'm like, oh, come on, come on. That's a thing I know about hockey. And like, he's even in the penalty box, like, insulting the player next to him and all this stuff. And then Marco gets annoyed enough that he pushes Elliot over the boards into like the box where the players sit. And he's like, I'm on your team. And he's like, wrong team. So great. I mean, not good. You should not You should not do that to your teammates. So Parker is watching the ticket booth as it closes, and she says, okay, Hardison, I need you on your way now. And then we see Rising, and he is shredding tickets to this game so that he can be, he can even say like, oh, well, there were fewer people, so there actually wasn't that much in the, or no, he did. I'm confused about why he shredded tickets as I talk about it.
You know what? And I looked at, there was an explanation on Kung Fu Monkey about that, like how they were accounting for it, because he shredded like half the sheet or something. And I read it, and I didn't quite get where he was going with it.
Okay. Because in the commentary, I thought they meant like he is trying to say that fewer people came, so he took more money that they didn't know to be worried about. But wouldn't it make more sense to be like, oh, we had a completely packed house, so there actually was a lot more money in the bag than was in the bag. And then the insurance would pay out that extra money. Does that make sense?
That would, but
I would be a horrible criminal.
But he wouldn't be thinking in terms of insurance, because he thinks this is just going off so that he can skim stuff. I didn't get that whole thing, because how is he taking money if it's all going in the box and it's $500,000 in that box? I don't know where it was. I think that was one of the things where, like, just trust us, there's $500,000 in that box. And I said, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe he took it out already. I don't know. Hi, baby. So anyway, there's money. They're shredding tickets. And then the guard comes for the money, and he takes it, and he goes to stand outside. He passes Hardison on the way. And just like we see in the flashback or the explanation that Parker gave us, he sets the case down on the loading dock as he waits for the armored car to come. And then goes away. And then we go back to the game, and Ellie gets put back in the penalty box, and Marco finally snaps, because we're down to like the last minutes of this game, 30 more seconds of this power play, and he hasn't gotten in a fight. And if he doesn't get in this fight, he's not going to get his bonus. And so he just snaps, and he literally, like, he drops his gloves, which is like the sign of like, okay, we're actually going to fight if both players drop their gloves. If one player attacks another player and they haven't had this like gentleman's agreement, then it's like really frowned upon. But if you both take off your gloves, you're both signaling like, yes, we are going to fight. And the referees will usually like stand back for a little bit before they come in to like break you apart. But nobody, the guy that he tries to drop gloves with is not dropping gloves. He just like backs up, and he is like wheeling around trying to find someone else. The game's come to a complete stop. Like, everybody is silent. The announcers are like, I have never seen anything like this before, because he's screaming like, drop your gloves. Come on, let's go. It's painful.
Yes. And it goes so long. Like, it was like long.
It's so uncomfortable. And then we see why nobody will fight him, because it flashes back to Elliot tackling somebody and telling them that every doctor he's seen said the same thing. He tackles another player. You don't want to be the one that kills a legend, do you? He's in the penalty box telling the guy with glasses that, like, you can see what I'm talking about, right? Like, he could die. This could be his next hit could be his last. So he's just been telling every single enforcer on the other team, like, don't do this. You could kill a fellow team, not teammate, but a fellow player. And then Marco realizes like no one's gonna fight with him, which is like, I feel like such a horrible thing that we've put on men. Like, I'm trying to imagine, like, I was like, this is like the worst thing, right? He's like in front of all these people, he's lost face, he's just like, what do you, it's almost impossible to recover from that. But then he sees his son, and he looks like, he smiles at him. And so he picks up his gloves, and then Elliot jumps out of the penalty box. He's like, I don't care that my time is not up in the penalty box. No one's paying attention to that clock. Uh-huh. And he like picks up his stick and gives it to him. And then the crowd cheers. And then Elliot decides we're going to play some hockey. Not yeah. a team official. It's Elliot.
Yes.
And then the announcer's like, well, Stu, it looks like we're finally going to see Marco play the kind of hockey he did back at the juniors for the last 30 seconds of this game. Yeah, so then we're going to play some real hockey. And back on the loading dock, the armor truck shows up and this poor guard can't pick up the lockbox. And so they have to radio in. They have to get a bank official because, as Parker said earlier, only a bank official can unlock the box. Because if they can't get it off the floor, they got to get everything out of it. And then it goes back and forth from the game, getting really exciting to then opening this box. And the official comes in and unlocks the box. And they look down straight through the bottom of the box.
Through the hole in the floor. Just
yeah, which is... Okay, so this was Parker's, one of her contingency plans. And I think it's really cute that it's really similar to the Gold Job episode where they just cut into the bottom of the safe mm-hmm. floor. I just thought about, maybe that's a little nod to Hardison's first official job, even though I don't think that was his, that actually wasn't his idea. His idea was much more complicated. But oh, that's kind of cute. And then back to the game. And they... Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. We see, like, the flashback of Hardison with his magnets attaching them to the underside of the loading bay dock doors that are on the ground and then using a cutting torch to get through them. And then in the final seconds of this game, like if they don't score now, it's going to go into overtime. But don't worry, Marco scored the winning goal. And he didn't fight anybody, and he didn't die, and they won the game. Very excited.
But he's not getting the bonus.
I know he's, yep, not getting that bonus. But he's also not dying.
Yes.
Because to be honest, that $500,000 is going to go to medical bills, like physical therapists and stuff, not to his son. And then it cuts to the empty arena with the lights off and Rising is on the ice again, shooting pucks. And Nate comes out and he asks him if he's here to gloat. And Nate's like, well, I'm going to be honest. Yes. Just a little. And then he has a hockey metaphor. You pinned me, really got me pinned up against the boards. Because now he can't go to the cops. He can't say, oh, hey, this money was stolen from me. Because they're going to look and be like, well, actually, you stole a lot of money from yourself. Right. How are we sure it's not you this time? And he's going to lose everything. And Nate's like, yeah, that's sort of the point. But then the team comes out on the ice in there with their hockey bags and their sticks and their nice game day suits. And they circle him. And I know that I said earlier that it's really awful when people fight, but there is part of me that really likes this like bloodthirsty, like, oh God, they're gonna kill him. Because this is so ominous, it's in the dark. They all look rightfully pissed because then Nate talks about, you put a bounty out on your own man, a guy that you knew put his life out on the line for his teammates whenever he stepped onto the ice. And he's, you know, Rising's like, oh, what's this? And he's like, well, these guys found out about your little plan to declare bankruptcy and not pay any of them. Or, you know, it could have been because you put a bounty on his head. And he asks, who are you guys? And this is the third time this episode where we were talking about, like, we see Hardison running the job at the beginning, we see Parker's contingency plan, and then we see Elliot explaining why you don't do this shit. and he says, every player on this ice is an enforcer, and you don't do this. Like, this is not how things are done, and this is what happens when you behave this way. Yeah, because enforcers are put on the ice to make sure that things don't go too far. If they do, they step in, they regulate, which is, he's not saying it explicitly, but he's like, that's what we do. Right. When things go too far, we step in. We provide leverage. Exactly. And they all like, all the players like drop their bags and step forward on the ice. And you're just like, oh, I love this. This is terrifying. I love this. And Ryzen's like, you don't have to do this. He's like, they took everything. Like, what do you want from me? And Nate pulls out a contract and a pen. He's like, you still have this team. This is a contract for the sale. And Rising, you know, assumes, because this is what he would do, that Nate wants the team for himself. And he says, no, it's going to be them. They're going to be the new owners of the Otters, kind of like the Green Bay Packers are like community owned. I don't know how that would work for actual players on the team, because then what if you need to trade people? Just like, well, we might just be bad, but we're all working on this game together.
Well, and maybe they're like shareholders. So you could be traded, but you would still, you know.
Oh, okay. There we go. That's how it works.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'd be a bad business person as well. So yeah, so he like looks at them all for a second, and then he drops his stick and gloves and he signs the contract. And as he hands it back, he tries to punch Nate, but Nate like dodges and like punches him out with like one punch. And all the players start tapping their sticks on the ice, which is also what they do instead of like clapping when they're like excited about something, or they're like commemorating somebody on the ice. They just like, they tap their stick on the ice. But here it's very ominous. Like, I'm like, the minute they leave, they're going to like devour him or something. Feels very much like sharks. Yes,
it is. It does definitely give that feel. It, you're like, I'm glad they're not going to show what comes next.
Right. Like, it would be terrifying if they just like walked off and you just saw them converge. But they didn't, because they give them the check to Marco and for $500,000. And Elliot's like, has a cut on his face. He's like, I'm not going to forget this, Marco. And then they walk off. And then it shows them watching, the teams watching practice, which has to be, it can't be immediately after, because they get a break after you've played the championship game. You don't immediately have practice the next day. You get to go on vacation. You get a little break. So I wonder if it's just been a little bit of time and they just hadn't told us that it's time. Because they're practicing and Danny's on the ice with his dad and it's really sweet. And Nate is still trying to get Sophie to remember where the Stanley Cup is. She's like, I don't remember. I don't remember. I don't remember. And he like looks over at Hardison and like, can you believe this? And Hardison doesn't care.
Nope.
Hardison's wearing like a cute little newsboy's cap. Like my grandpa would wear, and I love it. And that's another episode. It's rare that it's like all of them together. It's usually like one or two people or them, but then like Nate has an ominous thing at the end by himself somewhere, or Hardison and Parker. So it's cute when they're all together. But I like that game. I like that show. I like that show. I like this show. I don't know if you guys know this. Dedicated the last 3 years of my life to a podcast about it. Any other thoughts on this episode?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Let me make sure I said everything Abby had said. Oh, she also said the talk that they had about enforcers reminded her a lot of the documentary Ice Guardians. So if you're interested in learning more about enforcers, you can look that up. And they talk about the reasons that enforcers were necessary in the first place. Which, as I said before, it was like to protect star players if and when the refs don't. So, yeah. So, Abby, thank you for sending me your thoughts on that. Okay. For heist lights, there are two things that I want to do. I want to talk about things that we know about Leverage 2. And I want you to talk about your books some more.
Okay. That's good, because I don't have a separate heist light.
Good. Yeah, I haven't even like looked them. I actually, one did come up recently and I thought, oh, I should remember that. And now I have forgotten what it was.
Yes, because if you don't write it down, it just, I understand how that goes.
It's gone. It's gone. Maybe I put it on a Pinterest board somewhere, but who has time to look? Okay, let's see really quick. I started looking up like concussion syndrome things, and then I thought that's depressing. I'm not gonna do that. Sorry if you are interested in that. It's out there. But leverage two things have been happening. Last time we talked about the newest guest star that we knew of, which was LeVar Burton. But just yesterday or the day before, Christian Kane posted I love their selfies that they're taking with people. They're all masked up. Christian Kane's always the one doing it. His latest selfie with a guest star was French Stewart, which is very exciting.
Yeah, LeVar Burton, but I didn't know. I've been looking and waiting. I'm like, they're still just saying like, they're thinking summer of 2021, it's going to release like next summer. I'm like, I want a date, like a real date.
Right? So excited. Yeah, so we know French Stewart's going to be on it now. Judging from the background of that picture, sort of what French Stewart is wearing in that picture, and the picture that Gina Bellman posted, there's going to be an episode at a Renaissance festival. And I cannot tell you how excited I am. Because I love a Ren Fair.
Yes, I saw that picture of Sophie and Gina Bellman. She's like, don't tell anyone, here's what I'm wearing today. That one.
Yes. It's really cool. And then Beth Riescraff posted a picture, and she's like in a robe, so she's like in between scenes, I guess, but she's got like long dangly earrings on, and like her eyeshadow is like blue green and like shimmery, but looks like it's kind of been cried off a little bit. I'm like, oh, what does this mean? It also looks like they have their costumer bag, Nadine Hayter, who was the costume director for all five seasons of Leverage, because Beth Riescraff was tagging her with stuff on Instagram, so I'm following her now, and apparently she has both a puppy, well, a dog, and a kitten in the like wardrobe, like makeup area, because they posted pictures of a cat and a dog, and I'm like, that's really sweet. And Noah Wiley has been posting some things on his Instagram as well, but just like pictures of pretty sunsets.
Nothing telling.
Nothing too informative. And that's all I know right now. I think. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Tell me everything.
Okay. So when we talked last, I think I had probably just turned in maybe book two, but Carina Press will be publishing my trilogy. The series is called Counterfeit Capers. Book one, It Takes a Thief. Book two, Between Two Thieves. Book three, To Catch a Thief, which I'm still writing. And so it's absolutely Leverage inspired. I have two cousins, my token man, and his cousin Mia. It's her idea, and he kind of just comes on board to help her. Their fathers were in business together and ran a huge Ponzi scheme and stole billions of dollars. And when they were indicted, fled the country. So it's 5 years later. Now, so we don't see it. That's all backstory. 5 years later, she waited like their cousins, because their mothers are sisters. So okay. Moms have family money that has all been protected because they are smart women.
Awesome.
So Mia waits until she gets her inheritance, and she's going to use it to fund her operation. Her plan is to hit all of the men who were friends with their fathers, who profited off this scheme. And they do that through art. She's a curator at the Art Institute. That's what she knows. And so they assemble a team to go into these men's houses to steal their artwork and replace them with forgeries. And then they sell the artwork on the black market and use that money to pay reparations to as many victims as they can. So, oh, this family is going to lose their house. We're going to pay off their house. This family has twins going to college. We're giving them full ride scholarships to Northwestern. So, and it's all anonymous because she wants to do that. And she's hoping that, and when they start digging through things, she discovers that there's just some hinky timelines with the artwork that she's looking at. It was all purchased right around when their father's indictment came down. And so now she's thinking that these dudes are still helping their fathers on the run. Like they're, so she's like, now we're really taking it all because we're going to take their nest egg and we're going to drive them out in the open and we're going to bring them back for justice. That's her ultimate goal. So.
Oh shit. This sounds so good. Cause you kind of said some stuff about cousins and like family stuff, but yes. Oh my God. I'm very into this. I'm so excited.
I've had so much fun writing it.
Yeah.
And so it's still contemporary romance. So in each of the books, there's a romance. So book one is the hacker and the negotiator, who is Jared, my token man. so they become a couple. And then in book two, Nikki, my thief, while she is casing a job to steal a painting, she runs into her ex and she's like, damn, we're screwed because if he's here, he's running a con on our mark. And they're both after the same painting. And then
it's a race to the painting.
Oh, it's a mess.
It's like a two life crew job.
There is like double crossing going on. There's multiple forgeries happening. And then in book three, that's Mia's book. And she gets involved with the undercover FBI agent who's investigating the forgeries.
Oh my God.
Yes.
These sound amazing. And we said earlier, you're writing under the name Sloan Steele for these books.
Yes.
They are coming out from Karina Press, which is an imprint of Harlequin, right?
Yes.
Yes. And It Takes a Thief comes out April 2021.
Yes, April 27th, according to Amazon.
Okay.
I think that date is right.
Yes. Yes, it's on here too. And then June 29th, 2021 for Between Two Thieves.
And then the third one isn't up yet because, like I said, I'm still writing it, but it will be August 2021.
You get a deadline. Oh, okay. Oh, good. So yes, you won't have to wait too long once the first book comes out, which is really nice. We do have a little bit to wait now, but not. That's like, what, 5 months? Five and a half months?
And actually, once my website is up and running and I have my newsletter up, I've got some fun newsletter freebies. I've got some prequel stuff coming. I've got a lot of fun things planned because Sloan is like a new pen name. So she doesn't have followers. Obviously, anybody who follows me might migrate over, but it's totally new. I'm building an audience. I've got a lot of like fun things planned. So,
I hope you'll join us, listeners. So I'm going to be really excited.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have like a book club episode. Because if we do, like, we're going to finish season 5 and then we don't know when the next season of Leverage comes out. So we're going to have some filler episodes probably. So there are at least 3 Leverage novels. And then we've got your books. So maybe we'll just have Let's Go Steal a Book Club podcast.
We could do that.
That would be really fun. Ooh. Ideas. Okay. I love it. Shannon, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Literally anytime we can work it into our schedules. Okay. So the next episode is the first contact job. And I believe, Sally Kilpatrick is going to be back on to talk about that one.
I love Sally.
So yeah. So you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks-ish. We talk about the first contact. Okay, there was one other thing I wanted to mention. Oh, I did get a comment from someone that the podcast on Spotify wasn't the entire episode from last time.
Yeah, and no, I was listening to it and I'm like, it just cut off. That wasn't the end.
Yeah, you're like, it's only been an hour. This couldn't possibly be the end. But then I got an email from the website that hosts saying that they had also noticed a bug and they were going to try to get it fixed. So if you ran into that issue, hopefully it will be fixed and won't be an issue this time. If not, you can always download it from any podcast app. So sorry about that.